So does anybody remember what we talked about last week? Joseph, and what was the lesson that we learned about Joseph? Don't wear pretty coats, don't brag, stay away from other men's wives that are loose, yeah. What was the main, forgiveness, Carol was paying attention, that's good. Okay, forgiveness. I'm going to start a short series in the life of Joseph, and maybe three or four, five maybe parts to this, depending on how many I can squeeze out of his life. Today we're going to talk about patience, how Joseph was patient and he waited for the Lord. And I wanted to start with a short poem. It's only four lines, and I think that you'll appreciate it. You women out there will probably appreciate this. Patience is a virtue. Possess it if you can. Found seldom in a woman, never in a man. Patience is one of those things that's... I'll read it one more time in case you missed it. Patience is a virtue. Possess it if you can. Found seldom in a woman, never in a man. I think patience is one of the hardest things that we struggle with today in today's age. I wrote down a few things that I could think about that give us a hindrance on being patient. We have microwave ovens. We have online news. We have fast food. We have high-speed internet. We have kids that have ADHD and ADD and all these things, and we want things. We want them now. We have a short attention span. We're hyper about it. I thought of a bunch of other things that in my life, I have a hard time waiting. If I email somebody, I want to know right now. I want to know a response to my question right now. Can you guys relate to that? Being really impatient in your life? Well, let's start with Genesis chapter 39. And if you remember from last week, we talked about Joseph. Pretty much most of Joseph's life we went through last week. And if you remember the time when, as Phil brought up, when stay away from loose women, was one of the lessons that we learned last week, maybe. Joseph was stuck in a very compromising position with Potiphar's wife. Remember Potiphar, the guy who was the official of Pharaoh and the captain of the guard, it says in verse 1 of chapter 39 in Genesis? He was basically a servant. Joseph was a servant of Potiphar. And one day, actually multiple days, Joseph was asked to join into an immoral relationship with Potiphar's wife. She asked him to have sex with her, and she asked him numerous times. In verse 11, it says, one day he went into the house to do his work when none of the household servants were there in the house. She grabbed him by his outer garment, saying, have sex with me. There's an exclamation point there. But he left his outer garment in her hand and ran outside. When she saw that he had left the outer garment in her hand and had run outside, she called for her household servants and said to them, see, my husband brought in a Hebrew man to us to humiliate us. He tried to have sex with me, but I screamed loudly. When he heard me raise my voice and scream, he left his outer garment beside me and ran outside. So we have this false accusation. And what happens to Joseph? He gets in big trouble. It says in verse 19, when his master heard his wife say, this is the way your slave treated me, he became furious. Joseph's master took him and threw him into the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him kindness. He granted him favor in the sight of the prison warden. The warden put all the prisoners under Joseph's care. He was in charge of whatever they were doing. The warden did not concern himself with anything that was in Joseph's care, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he was doing, the Lord was making successful. What I've got out of this story about Joseph going to prison, I got three major points that I think that we could take from this, and it kind of is all laid out on your handout there. The first one is that in verse 21 and 23 of chapter 20 of 39, it says, but the Lord was with Joseph and showed him kindness. And then verse 23, the warden did not concern himself with anything that was in Joseph's care because the Lord was with him. The first point is that God is with us. The Lord is with us, just as he was with Joseph. Whenever we're going through times of struggle, whenever we're impatient, we want something, we want it now, We're waiting for a response from someone on an email. We're waiting for maybe a job opportunity. We're waiting for God's calling in our lives. We have to realize that he's with us, just as if he was with Joseph. So when God's with you, it says in verse 23, it says, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he was doing, the Lord was making successful. And if you really want this to be cemented in, this is repeated twice in chapter 39. But then in chapter 40, it's repeated five times. The Lord is with Joseph. The Lord is with Joseph. The Lord is with Joseph. There's five times, in addition to the two that we just read. That's seven times that God reminds us, the Lord is with Joseph. If you have a hard time being patient, remember that the Lord is with you. Maybe remind yourself seven times, like God did in this scripture. The Lord is with you. The Lord is with you. In 2 Timothy, this is a little bit of a New Testament application. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 16 and 17. You may want to put this on your outline underneath point 1. 2 Timothy 4, 16 and 17 says this. At my first defense, no one appeared in my support. Instead, they all deserted me. May they not be held accountable for it. But the Lord stood by me and strengthened me so that through me the message would be fully proclaimed for all the Gentiles to hear. And so I was delivered from the lion's mouth. So this is Paul speaking. He's on trial in a Roman trial. And he says, you know what? Everybody deserted me. There was nobody left to help me. But the Lord stood by me and strengthened me. Could you imagine being in prison waiting for trial? Being in prison like Joseph or being in prison like Paul? And, of course, Joseph didn't do anything wrong and Paul's imprisoned for his preaching. How patient do you have to be Joseph or Paul? And yet they realized that the Lord was there. And not only was he there, he was strengthening them. And he was making everything that they do successful. The Lord is there with us to strengthen, encourage, and comfort us. And we'll talk more about Paul in a few minutes here. Now let's go to point number two. Our patience should be active. Our patience should be active, not still. And this is probably my most strong point that I want to get across to you, is that when you're patient, it doesn't mean you're sitting stagnant. Your patience should be practiced being active, not being still. Look at Joseph's activity in prison. So what is the first thing that happens to Joseph when he's in prison? He becomes the head of the prison. Basically, he's doing all, it says in, the Lord was with Joseph and showed him kindness. He granted him favor in the sight of the prison warden. The warden put all the prisoners under Joseph's care. He was in charge of whatever they were doing. The warden did not concern himself with anything that was in Joseph's care because the Lord was with him, and whatever he was doing, the Lord was making successful. He was busy. He kept his hands busy. He was in charge of all the prisoners. He was doing probably the job that the warden should have been doing. That's up to debate because I've heard several different commentaries say different things, but he was active. He didn't sit around waiting, feeling pity for himself. He was active. He was doing something. Realize that God wants us to see results as he works for, as we work for him. God wants to see results, but his first concern is with our growth. That's why he often withholds success until we have learned patience. I don't know if Joseph saw the work that he was doing as being a success. If it was me, I would feel pity. I would feel like I was stuck in this prison for doing something that I didn't do. And woe is me. But God said that the work that Joseph was doing was a success. I got a quote here from G. Campbell Morgan. Waiting for God is not laziness. Waiting for God is not going to sleep. Waiting for God is not the abandonment of effort. Waiting for God means, first, activity under command. Second, readiness for any new command that may come. Third, the ability to do nothing until the command is given. So it's not being lazy, it's not falling asleep, it's not being pity party, it's being active. You don't abandon effort, he says. And part of this, which is the next little line underneath, number two, is that this includes serving others. What do we see in chapter 40? We see the dreams of the cupbearer and the baker were interpreted by Joseph. He could have sat there and acted like he had no idea what kind of dream, I don't know how to interpret, I don't know what this is. Instead of doing that, he served them with his gifts and let them know, hey, this is what this dream means. This is what your dream means. This is what your dream means. Might have been a bad thing for the baker, but he did not stop serving other people. So number two, our patience should be active, not still, and this includes serving others. And one of the other points that I really want to bring up about this is that this includes the menial things too. When we serve others, we have to understand that there's nothing that is too menial for God. I remember at camp learning this. When I was on TCL in 1997, I thought there was a lot of things that were beneath me, like cleaning dishes, mopping floors, scrubbing out toilets. You think that those things are menial. Let me give you a little word of advice. In God's will, nothing is menial. Whether it's doing dishes, you know, one of the biggest things that I've seen in this church is Val. After every single potluck we have downstairs, Val's in there cleaning the dishes. Because that's his thing. He does that. Nothing is too menial. Cleaning dishes, taking out the garbage, watching the kids in the Sunday school, teaching them, mowing the lawn out here. Of course, we have somebody do that, but vacuuming in here. There's nothing that's too menial for God. Because everything in his plan is important. Everything. And you might not notice it. We must realize that even when we are waiting for God, figuratively in a prison, if you want to look at it that way, we can have success. I want you to think about Joseph and the way where he was at. Joseph was in prison for something that he didn't do. As a foreigner, he wasn't born in Egypt. He was a foreigner. He wasn't an Egyptian. And yet God still gave him a mission in that prison. God still gave him something to do. So one of my questions for you is, in your life, you may feel like you're in a waiting room. You're not quite sure what's going on. You may feel like you're not sure where God's taking you, where you're going. Kind of like Joseph and Paul that we just read about. But I want to challenge you to think about, what does God have you doing right now? Whether it's doing the dishes like Val does, whether it's vacuuming the floors, helping lead the music, whatever the menial things that we think of as being not useful or not meaningful, they're meaningful. They're probably more meaningful than what I'm doing in a lot of ways. You know, being with the kids, serving the church like that, serving God like that. So what situation has God put you in right now? Not what situation do you want to be in 5 years or 10 years or 2 years. What does God have you doing right now? What situation does he have you in right now? And then I want you to ask yourself, would you consider it a success? Joseph was called successful in the prison, doing something that was probably fairly beneath him, or at least he might have thought that, or we might look back on it and say, man, he was destined for so much more. I'd like to suggest that success is all in how you look at your situation. It is a perspective. When Val gets done doing the dishes, does he look at it and go, man, that was a complete waste of time? No. He looks at it and he goes, look at all those beautifully clean dishes, right? And now we can put them away and they're all ready for the next meal in a couple weeks or a couple months, right? Do you look at what you're doing as a success, or do you look at it as being menial, useless, things that don't matter? I would suggest that your perspective is what dictates to you how you see success. And I want to give you a little foretaste of what we're going to talk about next week. It's Joseph managed his responsibilities well and gives credit to God. That's the last point under number two, is he gives credit to God. In chapter 40, verse 8, it says this. They told him, we both had dreams, but there is no one to interpret them. Joseph responded, don't interpretations belong to God? So he's crediting his gift of interpreting back to God. Some of us have musical abilities. Dan's got a good sense of guitar, and he's got a good voice. Mark's got a good voice. Pretty much everybody here has a good voice. When you look at your talents or your gifts, however you want to look at the things that God's blessed you with, do you give credit back to him? Because without these guitar skills and the piano skills, vocal skills, without God, you wouldn't have those. And it's the same thing with Joseph's managerial skills. He had a very good ability to lead and manage people, obviously. We'll get into that eventually, probably next week. But Joseph managed his responsibilities well, and he gave credit to God. The other one is in chapter 41, verse 16. He says, Joseph replied to Pharaoh. This is after he interpreted Pharaoh's dream. He says, it is not within my power, but God will speak concerning the welfare of Pharaoh. So he was interpreting Pharaoh's dream, and he said, I'm not the one who's, it's not me on my power, my ability, it's God's. He gave credit back to God. So that's the second point under number two, is that he gave credit back to God. I want to briefly talk about the prison epistles. The epistle means letter, and the prison epistles refer to a group of letters that Paul wrote while he was in prison. And I've got a list of them. Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, Philemon. There was an argument over a couple others, but these are the ones that they know for sure he wrote while in prison. Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, Philemon. If Paul felt pity party for himself while in prison in the New Testament, do you think he would have been actively writing books, letters to the churches? My point is that in whatever situation you're in, you have to be active. Whether you're waiting for God to answer something, whether you're waiting for a sign or a position or something for God to give you, if you're waiting on him for anything, you have to stay productive. You have to stay productive. The last point, number three, is we never know how long we are to wait. We never know how long we're supposed to wait. If you looked at Joseph in prison, if you saw him in the prison cell, you know, serving under the warden, managing everything, would you ever in a million years would have think that he would have been second in command to Pharaoh? I mean, we have hindsight, but pretend like you've never heard of this story in your life. Pretend that you've never heard this story, and you read Joseph's in prison. Wow, for something he didn't do, he probably should have been beheaded off the, you know, right off the bat, because the allegations were pretty bad. And yet, what happens to him? We think there's no possible way this guy could ever become a ruler of Egypt, ever in a million years. But what happens? Oh, before we get into this, throw on top of that that the cupbearer, the guy that he helped interpret his dreams, it says in verse 14, go back to chapter 40, verse 14, it says, but remember me when it goes well for you and show me kindness. Make mention of me to Pharaoh and bring me out of this prison. Okay, so he plants the seed in the cupbearer's ear, and what happens? Verse 20 and 23, on the third day it was Pharaoh's birthday, so he gave a feast for all of his servants. He lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker in the midst of his servants. He restored the chief cupbearer to the former position so that he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. But the chief baker, he impaled just as Joseph had predicted. And then what happened? But the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. Could things get any worse for Joseph? Not only is he stuck in this prison for something he didn't do, could you in a million years imagine that he was going to be basically up there with Pharaoh running the place? Within, what does it say? At the end of two full years, verse 1 of chapter 40, Pharaoh had a dream. So about 2 years later, God's timing was not probably the same as Joseph's timing. God's timing is probably not the same as my timing. And I could say, Dan and Carol, everybody in here, God's timing is probably not exactly with your timing. Because I want things and I want them now. I want to see results. Most guys want to see results. I should probably repeat that because Andrea and Mark missed it. I started with a a poem. It says, "Patience is a virtue. Possess it if you can. Found seldom in a woman, but never in a man." When I want something, I want it now. Patience is not something that comes by anybody very easily, but definitely not men. God was preparing Joseph and the world around him for what was going to happen. We know that Joseph became the manager of this whole, or the overseer of the whole process of the 7 years of plenty and then the 7 years of drought. And we'll talk about that later, probably in the next couple weeks. But Joseph was probably thinking fairly doom and gloom and negatively about where he was at. "Oh, that guy forgot about me. It's been 2 years. 2 years, and I haven't heard anything." But I think part of that waiting process is that God was preparing Joseph and everyone around him. We sometimes think that, well, if you wait on the Lord, that God's doing something in your life to get you ready for the next step, right? And we think of the process of waiting as building you into being a better person for the next step. But there's the fact that you're building character, but there's also the fact that there's everyone else around you who may not be ready for you to do that. I could imagine with Joseph, if he would have interpreted Pharaoh's dream right before or right after the cupbearer, maybe the people of Egypt wouldn't have been ready to receive him. Potiphar probably wouldn't have. I can only imagine the things that Potiphar found out about his wife afterwards. Maybe he already had a gumption of what was going on before. But maybe it took some time for the people around Egypt to be able to embrace Joseph for the position that he was called to do. So I want you to consider something. If you are waiting on the Lord, whether it be for a family thing, we've got major family things going on, you know, decisions that have to be made, processes that we need to go through to figure out the best result or the best decision to which direction to go in, and we're waiting on the Lord for that. Maybe it's an occupation, a job. Maybe it's a church thing. Maybe it's something else. If you're waiting on the Lord, realize that He's working on you to become the right person for that particular change in your life. And He's working on everyone else that will be involved with that change. Maybe your family's not ready. Maybe the people in that job aren't ready for you yet. So understand that everybody in that situation is changing to prepare them and you for that change, that position. Because if you could imagine a person going from a prisoner who was accused of raping or trying to rape Potiphar's wife to becoming second in command within a couple, four years, at least 2 years we know of, could you imagine that huge leap? It takes time. It takes time to make people ready for that change. Hindsight is 20/20, but while we are in the situation, we're usually unaware of what's going on. I had no idea God was preparing me for this, or I had no idea God was preparing me for that. I can say that about my roles in this church right now. If you would have told me 2 years ago today that I would be standing here right now doing what I'm doing, I probably would have said, well, yeah, I preach occasionally. I was preaching probably a third of the time at that point 2 years ago. But I had no idea what was going to go down within a few short months. That November of 2012. I had no idea what was going to happen. But I can see for the 2 or 3 years leading up to that, God teaching me, changing the people here, preparing people's hearts, preparing my heart, preparing me. It doesn't just happen overnight. So patience. Wait on the Lord. Have patience. And understand this, Joseph never doubted God. Kind of like with Job. You ever see Job go, my friends are right, I have to rebuke God, I have to disown God and just abandon him and die a sorrowful man, like his friends were telling him to. He didn't. He stayed faithful to God. I want to read a few verses. There's 43 times in the Old Testament, 43 times where it says, wait on the Lord. I'm just going to read two of them. Psalm 31:24. Be strong and confident, all you who wait on the Lord. Strong and confident. If you're waiting on the Lord, you can have confidence that his will is going to happen. Psalm 31:24. The next one is Psalm 37:7. Wait patiently for the Lord. Wait confidently for him. Do not fret over the apparent success of a sinner, a man who carries out wicked schemes. Wait patiently for the Lord. Wait confidently for him. That's Psalm 37:7. And there's 43 altogether in the Old Testament. I believe that this is one of the areas that everyone in my generation, and maybe in some of the older generations and some of the younger ones as well, need to hear. If God has given you something to do, it doesn't matter how small it is or how little the glory is in it, we are to do it. One of the things that I really feel strongly about as we close here is that too many of us are waiting for the big ministry positions. Like, I'm waiting for that big break. You know, I'm going to become a senior pastor, or I'm going to become a youth pastor. It's all about the title, right? I'm going to become the worship leader, the worship pastor. Everybody's a pastor these days. I'm going to become this, and I'm going to become that, and I want to do this, and I want to do that. We're waiting for the big break. Maybe it's even in your work. Maybe it's in your family. You're waiting for the big calling. And we miss these little ones. We miss the small opportunities that are in front of us every day. We let the little opportunities fly past us and we get beaten down by our surroundings to a point that we become useless for God because we're expecting the big calling. I'm going to get the big, I want to be the, here's one, I want to be the director at camp. I want to direct a week at camp. I want to be the big cheese because I want to be in charge because I've got all the tools that it takes to do it, right? But we don't want to counsel. We don't want to clean the toilets. We don't want to serve the meals, clean the dishes, mop the floors. And then when we don't get those big positions, we get beaten down. Well, maybe God doesn't want to use me. Maybe God doesn't want me. God wants you. He just wants you to see that there are opportunities everywhere at every level that you need to be doing something. If Joseph was waiting to be second in command to Pharaoh, or better yet, if he was waiting for his brothers to bow down before him, he saw that vision. When he was a kid, 17, 16, 17 years old, he saw the vision that his brothers would bow before him. When he's sitting in the prison rotting, he's probably thinking, what happened to my brothers bowing down before me? Instead of wallowing in his sorrow, he served. He served God. He served the people in the prison, served the warden, interpreted people's dreams. He used the gifts that God gave him. Give God the best of your abilities in everything that you do. The little things may very well be the big things in your life. Maybe God's called you to be a custodian of the church building. Maybe he's called you to write a letter to someone in prison. Maybe he's called you to hand out invitations to the neighborhood, to a little car show. Maybe that's what he wants. Maybe that is the big thing, because there might be a kid or an adult that comes to know the Lord because of the ministry here. It's not flashy. You're not Billy Graham. You're not George Beverly Shea or Keith Green, but God's still using you. Maybe the little things are the big things in your life. There is nothing in God's will that is minor. It's all major. So whatever he has you doing is a big deal. There's nothing too small. I have another verse. He who is greatest among you, let him be a servant. We all are familiar with that verse, I think. He who is greatest among you, let him be a servant. The person who never learns to submit and wait for God's timing will never be ready for leadership. If you're waiting for that big break in ministry, and you're not going to do anything else until that big break, it probably will never happen. Because just like with Joseph, Joseph knew that someday his brothers would bow before him. But it took years of breaking him down, rebuilding his character, giving him strengths and understanding and experience to build him into the person that he was going to be in the end. And sometimes the process is more important than the actual role at the end. God's timing is perfect. Think about your life. I want you to think about the careers, the family, your relationship. You might feel like you're suffering. But I found this, and I found it in a few different commentators. and preachers who use this. Suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance produces character, and character produces hope. If Joseph lost the hope that someday he will, the vision of that dream that he had, the interpretation of it, will someday happen. If he would have lost that hope, then he probably would have given up. But suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance produces character, and character produces hope. God is producing these qualities in us while we wait for him. What that means is that biblically, waiting is not just something we have to do until we get to where we want to be, but waiting is part of the process of becoming what God wants us to be. It's the process God uses to make us more like himself. And I want to end on, the last thing I want to end on is a verse out of Isaiah. This is my Uncle Arden's favorite verse. In fact, he had pictures or artwork with this verse on it, and it kind of makes me sad to think about it. But Isaiah chapter 40, verses 30 and 31. And if you don't know this verse, or if you haven't memorized it yet, I would really encourage you to memorize this verse. Uncle Arden had this thing about eagles. He loved eagles. He had pictures of eagles all over his house and his study and his library and that kind of stuff, and he loved eagles. It says, "Even youths get tired and weary. Even strong young men clumsily stumble. But those who wait for the Lord's help find renewed strength. They rise up. They rise up as if they had eagle's wings. They run without growing weary. They walk without getting tired." If you don't know that verse, I encourage you to memorize it. And you know what? Sometimes the process, now with Uncle Arden, he didn't make it through. He died of leukemia, so he didn't make it through the process. But sometimes the process is what God's trying to put us through to make us better, more like him. So you may become like Joseph, you may have a greater calling, and you may fulfill that greater calling, but it's out of the process of becoming more Christ-like, becoming more like him, that God is looking for us to grow. That's more important than actually taking the position and the role and the title of whatever in the end that he has for you. There's nothing too menial for him. And maybe Arden may have reached somebody. His nurse, I mean, he oozed with the gospel. The gospel just oozed out of that man. You never know the seed he could have planted, the people he affected while he was going through the leukemia. And ultimately, he didn't make it, but he's with the Lord now. And maybe you will make it. Maybe you'll be like Joseph, and you will reach a position of high calling in this earth. Waiting on the Lord. Be patient and wait on him.